One of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this old bus is gonna reel and rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
In his heavily anticipated interview with Oprah Winfrey, Lance Armstrong has confessed to using performance-enhancing drugs and announced his return to the Tour de France as outrageous fan-taunting villain Killstrong. Killstrong told Oprah, "I was once cycling's golden boy, but now that the world rejected me, I will be your greatest nightmare. It's time to bring the pain to the Tour de France." Before the Australian Road National Championships, Killstrong and his posse put the rest of the racing world on notice, shouting, quote, "Shut your mouths and get out of the way. I'm coming for you, and you, and you," before delivering a punishing blow to racer Bradley Wiggins with a folding chair. And the evil outlaw has gotten cycling fans riled up.
"Oh man, I thought I liked the old Lance, but now all bets are off. He's about to unleash a world of hurt. Yeah!
God, I loved you, Lance. What are you doing up there? What are you doing? You can't just switch sides like that."
The Tour de France's organizers have embraced Killstrong's shocking turn and have rebranded this year's race Cycle Slam 2013. The event will be broadcast live on pay-per-view and is expected to feature Armstrong teaming up with legendary Tour villain, the Strifel Tower.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
There is something about the way she conjures the ancestors. She dances when she walks like she's from the Congo. Pure, convo like Asada Shakur says, brothers don't understand the science behind her self-reliance. She has a tattoo of Noble Drew on her neck and a tattoo of Marcus Garvey on her breast and says you've got to have the presence of Martin Delaney if you ever hope to have a future in getting past her Malcolm X. She is smooth as the Hennessy she's sipping as we listen to Horace Silver playing our third game of chess, and I can't help but stare into the natural texture of her hair as she compares George Padmore with C.L.R. James. And from there, she discusses Rodney's, how Europe underdeveloped Africa, and compares that to Kwame Nkrumah's neocolonialism, the last stage of imperialism, and as her lips move, I get lost in her rhythm. And as her thoughts move, I get lost in her wisdom. I love it when she sings CCY2 to the children. I love it when we go on vacations and she puts that homemade sign on the door that says, do not disturb. Nation building. She is Harriet Tubman, loving her people with a passion, fashion like that last chapter in Carter G. Woodson's Miseducation of the Negro. We go conjure the ancestors after every poetry reading, breathing life into the souls that surround us like New Orleans, constantly calling me back. I bathe her in compliments. Wrap her confidence around my waist. I taste her ancestors' DNA every night because there's something spiritual about swallowing the same fluids that once coursed to the physical forms of her predecessor slaves and tribes. And yo, you might think you know me, but if you ain't never seen me with her, then you ain't never seen me alive. I said, you might think you know me, but if you ain't never seen me with her, then you ain't never seen me alive, because she goes from J.A. Rogers to Abubakar while her heart beats the rhythm of the Haitian Revolution and she dances to it, singing the songs of the Cimarron colonies of San Salvador. And as she moves, there's something about the way she conjures the ancestors. There's something about the way she conjures my soul by day and by night. There is something about the way that she has conjured me back from the dead. There is something about the way that she conjures me continuously back to life.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
I've apologized to you for that privately. I'm going to apologize on the air then.
Oh.
I went for going to a dark place and staying there. And I'm sorry about that. You didn't deserve it. And I have made, like you, have made a New Year's resolution.
Mm-hmm.
You go see more movies. I made three New Year's resolutions.
What are yours?
One, I'm not going to do that ever again.
Okay, that's good.
Two, I'm
I don't
not
know
gonna,
if anyone knows what you're talking
two,
about, but that's okay.
Well, just I was kind of, I was in a bad
it.
Place Thursday
out.
And Friday. Two,
yeah.
I think, and this is important too, I'm going to try to interrupt you less.
Oh.
In the new year.
That won't happen, but
and
okay.
And three, the next time we go to the White House, I'm going to try very hard not to poop my pants.
Diarrhea, cha-cha-cha, diarrhea, cha-cha-cha, diarrhea, cha-cha-cha.
And here in Washington, Crowds are already gathering for what is going to be an action-packed inauguration weekend. The president's public swearing-in and inaugural speech happening on Monday. But the festivities, you can see there, already underway. Big crowds gathering behind our CNN set here on the National Mall. Dan Lothian is here. He's covering the events. And Dan, I guess you can hear all the hoopla
behind us as well.
It's getting pretty exciting here. That's for sure. President Obama, though, he's going to tie a record on come Monday. He's going to tie Franklin D. Roosevelt's record of getting two double swearing-in ceremonies. Hard to believe.
That's right. I mean, look back to 2009 during the swearing-in when Justice Roberts was giving the oath. That was sort of the public one. They stepped on each other,
right.
And then there was one word, faithfully, that was moved out of place, and there was some talk as to whether or not it was legitimate. And I know at the time we asked the White House whether they would repeat it. They said no, but in fact they did. There was a second oath that was administered. It was private. It was at the White House.
Make sure they get it right.
That's right. This time it's a different issue. According to the Constitution, the oath has to be administered just before noon on the 20th. Well, the inauguration doesn't typically take place on a Sunday, so they will have a private ceremony on Sunday.
And again?
So they will have a private ceremony on Sunday.
And again?
So they will have a private ceremony on Sunday.
What the fuck?
Hey, it's all gonna work out. Here's sports.
Woe is us! We're in a lot of trouble!
When I got the news that my dear brother Barack Obama, President Obama, was going to put his precious hand on Martin Luther King Jr.'s Bible, I got upset. And I got upset because you don't play with Martin Luther King Jr. and you don't play with his people. And by his people, what I mean is people of good conscience, fundamentally committed to peace and truth and justice, and especially the black tradition that produced him. All the blood, sweat, and tears that went into producing a Martin Luther King Jr. generated a brother of such high decency and dignity that you don't use his prophetic fire as just a moment in a presidential pageantry without understanding the challenge that he presents to all of those in power, no matter what color they are. No matter what color they are. So the righteous indignation of a Martin Luther King Jr. becomes a moment in political calculation. And that makes my blood boil. Why? Because Martin Luther King Jr., he died owing to three crimes against humanity he was wrestling with. Jim Crow, traumatizing, terrorizing, stigmatizing black people, lynching and so forth. Not just segregation, the way the press likes to talk about it. Second, carpet bombing in Vietnam, killing innocent people, especially innocent children. Those were war crimes Martin Luther King Jr. was willing to die for. And thirdly, was poverty of all colors. He said it's a crime against humanity for the richest nation in the history of the world to have so many of its precious children of all colors and living in poverty, and especially on the chocolate side of the nations, and on Indian reservations, and brown barrios, and yellow slices, and black ghettos then. We call them hoods now, but ghettos then. So I said to myself, okay, there's nothing wrong with putting the hand on the Bible, even though the Bible's talking about justice, and Jesus is talking about the least of these. But when you put it Martin's Bible, I said, this is personal for me, because this is a tradition that I come out of. This is a tradition that's connected to my grandmother's prayers and my grandfather's sermons and my mother's tears and my father's smile. And it's over against all of those in power who refuse to follow decent policies. So I say to myself, Brother Martin Luther King Jr., what would you say about the new Jim Crow? What would you say about the prison industrial complex? What would you say about the invisibility of so many of our prisoners, so many of our incarcerated, especially when 62% of them are there for soft drugs, but not one executive of a Wall Street bank gone to jail? Not one. Martin doesn't like that. Not one wiretapper. Not one torturer under the Bush administration. At all. Then what'd you say about the drones being dropped
on our precious brothers and sisters in Pakistan and Somalia and Yemen. Those are war crimes, just like war crimes in Vietnam. Martin Luther King Jr., what would you say? My voice hollers out, then don't tame it. With your hand on his Bible, allow his prophetic voice to be heard. Martin, what would you say about the poverty in America now, beginning with the children and then the elderly, then our working folk and all colors, not just here, around the world? Don't hide and conceal his challenge. Don't tame his prophetic fire. So as much as I'm glad that Barack Obama won, I think that Brother Mitt Romney would have been a catastrophe, and I understand my... Brother Newt told the truth of him about vampire capitalism, but that's true for the system as a whole, not just Mitt Romney in that regard. But when Barack Obama attempts to use that rich tradition of Frederick Douglass and Ida B. Wells Barnett, use the tradition of A. Philip Randolph, use the tradition of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, use the tradition of Tom Hayden and so many others struggling to produce that voice that pushed Martin in the direction that he did, I get upset. People say, oh, Brother West, there's Smiley and West hating Obama. No, no, we just loving the tradition that produced Martin Luther King Jr., and we're not going to allow it to be in any way sanitized, deodorized, and sterilized. We want the subversive power to be heard. That's what made me think when he said he's going to put his hand on that Bible. Mm-hmm. And I'm praying for him. I'm praying for him. As is Newt, both of us Christians, you Catholic, I'm Holy Ghost funky, got gut bucket Baptist, but we're praying for him.
You ain't my bitch, nigga. Buy your own damn fries.
When I was a lass, I was proud of me class, like me father and mother before me. They taught me to fight for my civil rights.
And it's always the same old story.
The rich reign supreme while the poor can but dream.
And the labor all liberal or Tory.
Financial storms brewing in Canada. Botanists are up in arms over the new banknotes. Apparently they've used the wrong tree. Sean Blaney, who first noticed it, wants to know why the native maple has been sidelined.
Here we've got leaves from the Norway maple and the sugar maple. It's really hard to deny that the image is of a Norway maple.
It's not as bad as putting the wrong queen on our banknotes, but Sean says that's not the point.
We wouldn't think of putting a palm tree on the Canadian currency, or a tiger or baboon or something that doesn't occur in Canada as a native species, and I think the same should go for Norway maple.
The bank claims its designers brought in a botany specialist, and they say they deliberately designed the maple not to represent any specific species. Julian Starr, professor of botany at the University of Ottawa, isn't convinced by the Bank of Canada's arguments.
Would have said immediately that it'd be best to make it look more like a native maple leaf. I mean, this, to me, is just wrong.
The system is bent and the money's all spent.
We're murdered from every direction.
The workers get taxed while the wealthy relax.
With nary a moment's reflection.
When it's gross, there's muck.
And it don't give an off. There's a program against insurrection. And I say, bugger the bankers and politicians. Bugger the bureaucrats too. Bugger the buggers who make up the rules. And if you're one of them, bugger you.
The U.S. Treasury Department will not mint a $1 trillion platinum coin to avoid defaulting on the nation's debt. For weeks, people have speculated the $1 trillion coin could be a loophole for the White House if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling. The Treasury Department says it doesn't believe the law can or should be used to make platinum coins to avoid an increase in the debt limit.
Now all you good people with passion to vent, don't give up the struggle for justice. But I've done my time on the protesters' line, and these days I show my dissent.
We're going to turn now to the case of the counterfeit money, a man who led his family, federal agents say, pumping more than $1 million into cash registers across this country. Here's ABC's Steve Osunsami.
It looks real, but this $100 bill is funny money, and production is booming. Federal authorities are now saying that in most cases, the crooks are using everyday office equipment, scanners, printers, and printer ink.
It's easier. And it's faster today because of copiers and the sophistication in different type of inking systems.
In Atlanta, they busted a graphic artist known in criminal circles as the printer. Prosecutors say that Heath Kellogg, his father, and four other men produced more than $1 million in counterfeit bills, using a printer to print out fake 50s, printing the front of the bill on one sheet, the back of the bill on another, before carefully gluing it all together. There are a flood of how-to guides on the internet. And in November, Rhode Island police arrested this man who they believe learned how to use a chemical soup to rub off the ink on $5 bills, turning them into fake 100s. He's maintained he's innocent.
If a consumer takes the time to look at the watermark and realize that it doesn't match the portrait, then they would know that something is wrong with this bill.
The government says new security features do help.
Now, if you take the note and tilt it back and forth, you'll see that the 100 in the lower right corner actually shifts from copper to green.
Now, they say, is a good time to take a closer look at the money in your pocket.
Are you one of the people who believe that everything that's happened through history is an accident? Well, listen to this, folks, and listen very carefully. Those desiring substantial evidence of the unfoldment of the great plan should follow the suggestion inscribed upon the monument to Christopher Wren in St. Paul's Cathedral and gaze about them. The rapid advancement in the social and political states of man, the increasing richness of human living, and the broadening vision toward individual and collective responsibility herald with auroral colors the rising of the Sun of Truth. There is much yet to be accomplished, but already the achievement is impressive. Even the most devout humanist cannot survey the orderly progress of the race and at the same time deny the existence of a well-integrated program. The light of the ancient Vedas is slowly but surely illuminating the whole world. The vision of man's noble destiny and the sacred sciences which made possible the realization of that vision have been guarded and served by the silent ones of the earth, the priesthoods of the sacerdotal colleges, the hierophants of the mystery schools, and the adept masters of the secret societies have been the guardians of man's noblest purpose, the perfection of his own kind. Vast organizations, industrial, political, social, and educational, have been made possible by the modern life way. These have become the molders of public opinion, feared or respected according to the measure of integrity revealed in their management. The future of human society is intimately associated with the destinies of these vast enterprises, which have inherited, along with physical success, the duty, or more correctly, the privilege of world guardianship. There is every indication that the esoteric tradition will next function through that complex of vast interrelated organisms of production and distribution which now dominates human imagination. While this structure may appear to the superficial minded as heartless and soulless, it is also the largest and most powerful potential instrument for the advancement of mankind ever yet devised. Education, science, and economics are today indivisible. They have already formed a partnership for their mutual advancement. Equipped with knowledge, skill, and the necessary physical resources, this huge combine awaits the destiny for which it was intended. Progress is not bound inevitably to any nation or people. Social and political structures are instruments for the advancement of the great work only to the degree that they keep the faith. If ambition or selfishness breaks the bond, the privilege of guardianship is forfeited. And this does not mean that the project fails. Rather, that which fails the project loses the privilege of leadership. The plan, then, passes to the keeping of other groups and other ages. Man cannot destroy or pervert the works of destiny. He can only divide himself from those works and by so doing cease to share in the essential vitality of progress. Thus it is that unreasonable doubts and fears concerning providence are philosophically unsound. Failure is always regrettable, but principles do not fail, and that which is foreordained perfects itself. Although empires may collapse, great teachers be martyred, schools and systems perish, and enlightened leaders remain unhonored, the substance of the great work remains unchanged and unchangeable. New vehicles appear even as the older ones are betrayed by human selfishness. The eternal commonwealth is an assignment of destiny and spiritual progress, symbolized by the fabled phoenix, rises victoriously from the ashes of the human ruin. The adept tradition has always available social instruments waiting to be ensouled with the larger vision. All things created by men are mortal and destructible. But the way destined by heaven is immortal and indestructible. Universal enlightenment and universal fraternity are the natural ends which reward the social struggle. The world and all that inhabits it are moving triumphantly toward peace and security. At any given time, the vision may be obscured, but in the larger dimensions of time, all things work together for the fulfillment of the greater good. Is that a piece of excellent retrospective writing looking back on history? No, ladies and gentlemen, it is not. For this was written by Manly P. Hall in Los Angeles, California, in April of 1951. What he predicted is what is happening. A wedding, a marriage between the corporate world and the state, which is coming. He's talking here about socialism, humanism, the concept that man will become God, and the new religion will change with the needs of man, not man conforming to the laws of God. Manly P. Hall was an adept, a highly degreed. In fact, he was a 33rd degree Freemason, may have held many, many other degrees in the secret societies of Mystery Babylon. He was a priest of the order.
You Catholic, I'm Holy Ghost Funky Gut Bucket Baptist.
Our guest. guest, Lori Hendrahan, is a professor and lecturer at American University. She's in Washington. Lori, you know, in terms of stories, it for many people does not get any more disturbing than this. And when we speak of half of the child pornography industry, half of all that occurring and being made in the United States, a lot of people would be shocked at that alone. Never mind federal employees engaged in this or government employees engaged in this kind of thing.
My mind's telling me no. But my body's telling me yes. Baby, I don't want to hurt nobody, but there is something that I must confess.
Not only federal employees, but the military with top security clearance, apparently using their .mil email addresses, about 5,000 military at the Pentagon, and the Pentagon decided not to even investigate 1,700 cases because they decided it wasn't a priority. So Senator Grassley has got that reopened, making it a priority. But yeah, it's pretty staggering. It's the fastest growing crime in America. It's growing by about 150% every single year. So we don't have really, really good data on how much child porn and child trafficking is being done, but we do know that America is probably the number one place in the world right now when you combine all the figures.
You want, and I know just what you need, girl. So,
baby, bring your body to me.
Bring your body here. I'm not fooling around with you. Baby, my love is true.
Ed Meese was Attorney General. He became one of the very few and very lucky guys who got to watch a lot of porn and get paid for it. In 1984, Reagan appointed Attorney General Meese to head the presidentially created Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, which meant that for 2 years, Ed Meese got to look at gay porn, straight porn, all the porn he could possibly get his hands on, which as Attorney General was a lot of porn. And after drowning in porn for 2 years and getting paid for it, Ed Meese issued an almost 2,000-page report that reached this conclusion. Although the evidence may be slim, we nevertheless now know enough to conclude that pornography does represent a clear and present danger to American public health.
Someone like me, yeah.
give you the fun fact of the day here. They did a study of who watches the most porn. Number one, our capital, District of Columbia. New York was fourth, and I love the numbers. Videos watched per person, 7.5. Massachusetts, a little over 7.5. Hawaii, a little over 7.5. District of Columbia, over 14. They doubled the second largest place in the country. That's how much our politicians watch porn.
So you go by your first pet's name and then the first street you ever lived on, and then that would be your name if you ever decided to, you know, venture into naughty films.
Did you give out the rules for picking out your porn name? Did you actually do that in the Lisa Jackson story?
It wasn't me. Lisa Jackson did it first. She didn't mean to pick the porn name, I understand.
But you didn't disclose your porn name. You did not disclose your Minnie Megan Kelly fans.
It's not good. Ready?
What is your porn? How do you
Noah
do it again?
Noah Ardsley.
No one
wants to see that. But can I tell you this? Because I wrote this down. Monica Crowley and Julie Roginski were out here.
Right.
Monica's is Muffin Hunt.
I only date ninjas. And you are not a ninja.
Most importantly, the word jizz waffles. I've covered a lot over these 2 years, but if I had to nail down a theme, it's the knockdown, drag-out, f***ing fist-in-your-face fight over the hegemony of this country. Hegemony is the control of the ideas that manipulate the social consciousness, often of one nation over others, but also of the power elite over everyone else. As philosopher Slavoj Žižek says, this control is used to take ideology and mangle it into culture, making it seem natural and normal, making it seem as second nature as leaving a coffee shop after you release a fart so immense it sounds auto-tuned. And in general, the rich as f*** are winning this battle in as much as they drive their Brinks trucks up to the popular consciousness and rob it of its natural wants. They convince people that it's normal to have 3% of the population in prison or on parole, that it's common sense to lock people away for having a drug problem or a drug solution, that it's somehow standard operating procedure to destroy the life of a family tricked into a subprime mortgage because they didn't show personal responsibility, instead of going after the bankers who have a moral compass spinning around so furiously that it's f***ing airborne. The powerful attempt to take the ideology that it's somehow all right to drone bomb the shit out of every threatening bunch of black and white dots on a computer screen and turn it into an accepted part of our culture, something people no longer question how shit it is. Like 50 Shades of Grey. We're supposed to accept at a deep level that safety from perceived terrorists is more important than your freedoms. They try to force us to believe all the way down in our balls that it's normal to have to work 3 jobs to support a family you don't even like. It's kind of like that movie Inception where DiCaprio puts an idea in the guy's head and then the guy thinks it's his own idea and then Juno is like, BT Dubs, this shit is craptastic. And then the kid from Third Rock from the Sun is like, whoa. This is the fight to turn sick ideology into accepted culture. We seem to accept that the two political parties essentially agree on the biggest issues of our time. War and Wall Street, wealth, and the idea that Howie Mandel has some kind of talent. We seem to accept that our goal in life is to collect the most things, cars and clothes and babies, and not concern ourselves with what's happening to the natural world around us and whether it can sustain the extra large cars and the supersized babies and the gasoline needed to haul our FedEx babies around from one meaningless store filled with Korean-made crap to another meaningless store filled with Chinese-made crap. This is the fight that goes on every day on every media outlet, whether people know it or not. The solution is to do the reverse, to take things that seem natural, like the idea that war is infinite or that factory farms are inevitable, and turn them back into ideologies. One day soon, I hope most of America will look at the millions of pigs so filled with steroids they're like chemical piñatas, forced to live their entire lives in a cage too small to turn around in, and go, well, that's one view of how the world should work. I don't buy it, though. Or the fact that CEO pay is nearly 400 times that of your average worker. Rather than saying, that's how capitalism goes, let's say that's one theory on how it should work. And that theory is f***ing insane.
This thing could have caused a major blast from the past. Literally, some preservation workers cleaning that Revolutionary War era cannon the other day were shocked to see it was loaded with the cannonball and live gunpowder. That's not all. The cannon was mounted on public display in Central Park for more than 100 years.
It's an amazing surprise that was there for so many years and people were sitting on it when it was a loaded cannon.
No joke. The cleaning crew called the bomb squad, who carefully disarmed the cannon, and a police spokesman says, yes, in theory, it could have been fired all those years it was on public display.
The kindergarten student branded a terrorist threat. She was suspended from her school in Pennsylvania for threatening to shoot another kid. Her weapon, this Hello Kitty bubble gun. ABC's Gio Benitez, ABC's newest correspondent, we should say, is here with the story. I know you've been on weekday GMA, but let us welcome you to weekend.
Thank you so much.
And
glad
you brought,
to be here.
You brought a prop, I see.
Yeah, it's one like this one. You know, Dan, the school took this so seriously that administrators even ordered that the five-year-old receive a psychological evaluation, all for talking about a bubbles gun like this one. This morning, the family plans to sue the school to get this all off the child's permanent record.
Was this the weapon of choice for a new kind of terrorist? Terror by Bubbles, the small pink Hello Kitty toy gun, is an automatic bubble blower. But just days ago, when a five-year-old girl said she and a classmate should shoot each other with bubbles, the school called it a terrorist threat.
I think people know how harmless a bubble is. It doesn't hurt.
You know, when I visited Newtown last month, I spent some private time with many of the families who lost their children that day, and one was the family of Grace McDonald. Grace's parents are here. Grace was 7 years old when she was struck down. Just a gorgeous, caring, joyful little girl. I'm told she loved pink. She loved the beach. She dreamed of becoming a painter. And so just before I left, Chris, her father, gave me one of her paintings. And I hung it in my private study, just off the Oval Office. And every time I look at that painting, I think about Grace. And I think about the life that she lived and the life that lay ahead of her. And most of all, I think about how, when it comes to protecting the most vulnerable among us, we must act now. For Grace. For the 25 other innocent children and devoted educators who had so much left to give. For the men and women in big cities and small towns who fall victim to senseless violence each and every day. For all the Americans who are counting on us to keep them safe from harm. Let's do the right thing. Let's do the right thing for them and for this country that we love so much.
federal government, if the House and the Senate pass this legislation that the president is asking for, he signs it into law, everyone in the United States would have to obey the law. How would you avoid obeying the law?
First off, thanks for having me on. We're going to do everything we can to call people back to the belief and the understanding that we're a constitutional republic, and that our rights do not come from Congress. Our rights come from God and are enumerated in the Constitution. What they're proposing, and here's what I really want to stress, he said that we will be judged. Our generation will be judged based on how we deal with this. Cotton candy political solutions aren't going to fix this problem.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but the question I'm asking, and I'm not getting a direct answer, Congressman, Representative, excuse me. The specific question, if it's passed by Congress, and once again, I don't know if the Congress will pass it, but if it's passed by Congress, every U.S. citizen has to obey the law. What you're proposing is that people in Texas...
We will do everything we can in the state of Texas.
But I just want to make sure law-abiding citizens in Texas,
We will do everything in the state of Texas to ensure that, as Texas, we follow the United States Constitution. And if this government infringes on our Second Amendment right, which gives us the right not only to bear arms, but tells the government, the federal government, not to create any laws that infringes on those rights, we will do everything we can to push back against that.
Two sheriffs in Oregon are taking a stand on the gun control issue. They say they will not enforce any new gun law they consider unconstitutional. Linn County Sheriff Tim Mueller sent a letter to Vice President Joe Biden objecting to laws that take firearms away from citizens.
I just want honest American citizens that are law-abiding to be able to own that type of firearm. And it doesn't hurt anything in the hands of a good person.
The sheriff of Crook County, Jim Hensley, showed his solidarity with the Linn County sheriff by signing a similar letter sent to Biden. Hensley says the country already has enough gun laws. Well, we're getting reaction to this story on our Facebook page this morning. Clay Pratt says, I would stand with that sheriff. His head is on straight. But James Wheeler writes, good luck with that. Right or wrong, the sheriff's duty is to uphold the law. If he doesn't, every law he does enforce is in jeopardy.
We're consuming the world and the skies on hill. We're just coming up with his top ideals. It's not too late to fight. It's not too late to say. We're gonna make it well on the way. We're consuming the world and the skies on hill. We're just coming up with his top ideals. It's not too late to fight. It's not too late to say. We're gonna make it well.
Presidents have the power to do executive orders. That's a power that's conferred on the president by Congress and by the Constitution. And so there are those, and as Rand Paul said, he wants to nullify. Nullification is a code word. Look at
for
when
what?
Nullification has been used. It's been used a lot, kind of it's a states' rights argument that gets used in times of great controversy. But the president is acting by executive power that is legally conferred on him. And as you pointed out, you went over these executive orders. They are basic common sense things, mostly geared around information, sharing information with communities so that we can take the steps we need to reduce gun violence.
Right, but when you say nullify is a code word, usually there's some end game to the code. So what's being said?
We'll see what it is. But the notion that we're going to nullify presidential action when the president is acting pursuant to law, that's just kind of this anti-government rhetoric.
As you know, I just got back from England, which they have not bought into this whole diversity enthusiasm, which raises the important point that on the gun crimes, we keep hearing how low they are in Europe and, oh, they're so low when they have no guns. If you compare white populations, we have the same murder rate as Belgium. So perhaps it's not a gun problem. It is a demographic problem, which liberals are the ones are pushing. Let's get more Colin Fergusons and more whoever the guy was who shot up Fort Hood. Why are they coming in to begin with?
It is said when you see someone who looks like they don't feel very well, you say, my goodness, you look like death eating a cracker. Or if they look really bad, you say, you look like death eating a cracker walking backwards.
The leader of Bulgaria's ethnic Turkish party was targeted by a man wielding a gun during a televised conference. Ahmet Dugan from the Movement for Rights and Freedoms had been giving a speech when the man jumped on stage and pointed a gun at his head. Security guards tackled the man to the ground and could be seen beating and kicking him. Police said they had arrested a 25-year-old man from the Black Sea town of Burgas, who was also carrying two knives.
Shortly after members of the New York Police Department found a super sharp Buck brand pocket knife earlier this morning, Lieutenant Joseph Mattioli spoke to Onion reporters at the scene of the discovery to update the public on this potentially deadly blade.
At 8:40 a.m., police discovered what seems to be a pretty badass Buck knife. Investigators believe it to be basically the deadliest knife ever. It actually seemed like there's a little blood on the tip, which is super freaky. As you can see, this knife is so sharp that we believe it can easily cut through a piece of paper, maybe even an apple.
Mattioli confirmed that the pretty cool wood-handled knife has a clean edge and added that the blade must be, quote, at least like 8 inches long.
At this time, we'd like everyone to be aware that there's probably a man out there with an eye patch and scars all over his face that has access to these knives, or maybe even a samurai sword. We urge people to be careful when approaching him because he may flip out and chop both your arms off before you even realize it.
Following the announcement, Mattioli asked people to come forward if they had any information about the owner of the knife or if they just wanted to hold it for a couple of seconds.
The flicker rate on the television is very, very important. It was times to be so many cycles per second, and it actually just meets with the brain patterns for an alpha state. When our brain sees it through our eyes, we start to adopt that flicker rate in our mind, and we go into a deep alpha state. Watch children and watch their mouths. They drop open. They won't hear their parents talking. They're hypnotized, in fact. Why would they give that particular flicker rate when they could have chosen of a whole variety of flicker rates? It wasn't an essential thing to have. So it was done for a purpose. It was meant to be hypnotic. It was meant to be used as a tool of propaganda and indoctrination, even through the guise of entertainment and so on. It also was to create a new society, because they were the avant-garde, as I say, leading the sexual revolution through drama, through little documentaries, fiction, non-fiction, all combined. Once again, back to Plato, the audience see what they see. You understand that it's even worked out towards different age groups. There's something on for everybody, everybody's age group. Each age group is actually being updated as well, even the elderly ones, into new ways of thinking or seeing things. But the target mainly was for youngsters. If we take one of the world's experts on propaganda, who is Jacques Ellul, who wrote extensively on how the mind works and how all entertainment, he said, that has to do with government programs such as police, detective stories, detective series, which contain little human dramas as the hook that you identify with to make you watch the whole story. Child gets kidnapped, detective goes on a hunt, he goes through hell and what, fire, to get that child back. You identify with the hero if you're a male. You identify with the heroine if you're female. And that's the hook to get you to watch them. But what he said was, all dramas to do with police, or even the military in movies, are pure propaganda. Pure propaganda. The human story is just the bait to make you watch through it, to get you to identify with it. Because once again, there's always a message left somewhere in the movie. It might even be a message that's against your own morality. It could be where the cop, for instance, does sleep with this beautiful woman while his wife is at home, and it's all part of the story, and even tell you why he did this, he was feeling down that day, blah, blah, blah. And so you've just again altered your viewpoints on how you yourself might behave in that situation. And that sometimes that kind of thing can be justified. That's how you're downloaded through entertainment. It's there to alter and direct and always upgrade into another step of the direction that the entire culture for someone else's purpose. Let's talk about the effects of the alpha state first of all. Recent articles I've even read on the air from various science studies show you that even when you switch off television, you remain in that alpha state for maybe 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes longer, depending on how long you've been watching it. With high definition, again, why would a president of a country mandate that all TVs had to go high definition? Is it because he really cares so much about your happiness, and he wants better quality for you? Or is there another reason for it? Well, I'm sure the effects of the old flicker rates and what it did will also be incorporated in high definition, but with even more added benefits for bringing you into a complete hypnotic state. How do you wake someone up who's addicted to television? You can't. Very, very simple. You can't get your daily brainwashing, where literally it's bypassing any consciousness in the person. You can't take that every day and still try to wake up and learn at the same time. I've known people who've gone through complete withdrawal from television and gone into depressions because their entire routine is broken. They also have time on their hands, which is a big aspect of control, remember, too. If you can take time away from a person who can think for themselves, who might say, oh, I'll go and read a book, I'll go and study something, or if you can take that time away from them and have them mesmerized in front of a television set, then you'll keep them dumb, stupid, compliant, and going along with the system. I always advise to people, if you know someone who's watching TV, it's quite simple to find out where they are mentally, psychologically, in the understanding of things. You can ask them a few simple questions. If they give you standard television answers, forget it. Simple as that, forget it. If you see some spark of their own opinion coming in, there's maybe a chance you can do something with them. But you cannot get off. You see, television, it can be classified as a drug.
I don't have a TV, But one of my friends watches Fox News, and he thinks all of this is crazy. They must have some way to brainwash the masses through that television or something, because anybody that watches a lot of TV, they're brain dead.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.